Hey, welcome to the Film Podcast.
Yeah,
I'm excited. Everybody's excited here. Just calm down, guys. Calm down.
I can't hold it in.
Yeah. It's your day. Yeah.
With fruit flavor.
Yeah. As always, I'm Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And today we're joined by our official repeat guest, Blaine Weaver.
Yay. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah. All right. We had you on before. What was the last topic we talked about with you?
Well, let me think about that. That would have been the film 6 month Rule and its theatrical release. Oh, you mean the topic? The topic. I'm sorry. I just want to get my plug right out of the way.
Go ahead.
Of the film 6 month Rule. I might be talking about it in a minute. 6 month Rule is a romantic comedy, and I believe we talked about our top five romantic comedies.
That's right. And you were just that when you came on the first time. It was just going to be released on, it was a video on demand, and you had a theatrical run for a
while. We did a theatrical run. We did about 10 cities, and then it came out on video on demand and iTunes and Amazon streaming and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's about to come out on DVD. So
on May?
On DVD?
DVD? Yeah. On May or April? When is it?
Oh, yeah, it's May 28th.
May 28th. Cool. And then you have another movie you're promoting.
Yes, it's a movie called Favor. And Favor is a thriller about a guy who accidentally kills his a girl he's having an affair with, and he asks his best friend from childhood to help him get rid of the body. So things escalate from there, and it's a thriller, and it's really cool, and it's premiering at the Phoenix Film Festival April 5th.
Wow, right soon.
And then are those your only two? It's Phoenix, and then are you somewhere else?
Phoenix, and then Sonoma. Is what we're doing right now, and they're super close together.
Yeah.
So it's like, which is awesome. You know, like there's nothing more fun than doing the festival circuit. It's like, it's like the best of all things. Like you get to talk like independent film, like you're this, you know, gorilla kind of guy, but also people are treating you like you're a movie star, and it's like it has no real bearing in real life at all. But is really fun, and there's usually free drinks.
Oh wow!
Bonus.
That. Yeah. Right?
That you had me at that. I'm like, all right, I'll show up. Now let's talk a little bit about. I think we talked a little bit last time you were here, but so you let's talk about the journey. You're born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yeah, Bossier City technically, but Bossier City. Nobody knows Bossier, so we say Shreveport. Yeah.
So then you when do you get like the itch? Like, hey, I got to make movies. And first of all, it starts off as acting, not directing or writing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I started acting actually when I was five. I started doing theater in Shreveport, basically because I was a hyperactive. Little obnoxious child. And I started doing theater, and I did three shows a year from the time that I was five until I was 14. And when I was 14, I started doing theater with the college. You know, I was always the kid, you know, whoever the kid was in the play, that was me. And while I was doing that, I would do, you know, my mom would sometimes drive me the three-hour trip to Dallas, Texas, which had a very small film community, and I'd audition for stuff. And randomly, for no real reason whatsoever that I can really understand, I booked an NBC movie of the week. And my junior year of high school, my mom and I were flown by NBC to Australia for 6 weeks to shoot this, you know, disaster movie called The Flood, Who Will Save Our Children.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Adam would love it. You really need to access this, my friend. I don't know if anyone was smart enough to put that on the interwebs, but it's tearful. There's a lot of crying. It's Lifetime before Lifetime, if that makes any sense. Anyway, so I did that, and then I came back and did, you know, I spent the summer in Los Angeles, you know, acting like I was a hotshot and I didn't know anything. Staying at the Oakwood, if that means anything to anybody.
It means anybody who has tried acting or is doing acting, they know the Oakwood.
Yeah.
Like everyone's like it's like that's like a like the when you first come into LA, it's like a dorm. And
it
you
is.
Know,
it is. And like everybody was there. Like so many people that are stupid famous right now were there when I was a kid, you know? And like I remember I would go swimming and the Free Willy kid was always in the pool. And I'm like, this is so weird. Anyways, I don't know what he's doing right now. But but anyways, I went back. I finished my senior year of high school. And then I did another movie that I booked out of nowhere and did that. And then I moved to New York. And I moved to New York. I lived in New York for like 6 months and went to a acting school that I wasn't really fulfilled by. And when that cowboy movie that I had done the summer before came out in L.A., I moved to L.A. So I've been out here since I was 19. And,
oh, wow.
And I'm about to move to New York, and that's kind of like one of the reasons I'm here. Because this is like we're running out of time to do this.
Well, eventually we're going to have you Skype in, eventually, you know.
The technology is too much for me. I don't know if I can crack that.
We'll have to send someone out to New York to set everything up for you.
Yeah.
That would work.
I just want to go to New York because I still haven't been.
That's really?
Ridiculous.
I've still never been to New York.
There's something wrong with you, dude. That's very un-American.
Un-American.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like most of America doesn't like New York, so... If anything, it's patriotic.
All right. So you come out for the acting, and so how does the writing kind of evolve out of that? How do you not getting the parts you want, and you're
pretty much. I mean, that was pretty much it. Like I knew from a very young age that I loved acting and I loved theater, and then from that it grew into I loved film and I loved being on set and. I just wasn't, you know, getting the parts. I was working a lot. This was I started writing in about 2001, and I was working a lot, but I wasn't getting good parts. I was getting like two lines on ER and, you know, silly things like that. Lots of commercials as the pizza delivery boy and stuff like that. Anyways, so I wrote a movie, and I had a roommate at the time who was studying English Lit at UCLA, a guy by the name of Michael Bacall.
Yeah.
And we got together and we wrote this movie called Manic. And it ended up getting made and Don Cheadle starred in it and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel. And it was, you know, it was a huge thing for us getting that movie made. And we didn't know what the hell we were doing. We really stumbled into it. But then I was all of a sudden a writer and we went to Sundance with that movie and I was like, wow, all right, you don't get like a much better introduction to writing than that. And Mike is now, you know, like he took, you know, the total, you know, hotshot route and now just wrote 21 Jump Street and Project X and all, you know. Meanwhile, I took a left turn because I really didn't enjoy that filming very much because the director was not my kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, if he can do this, I can do this. And so that's how I started directing, you know, was... It was just a response to the situations I was put in, you know?
Now, did Michael Bacall want to always be a writer, or was he an actor as well? And then
he was an actor as well. We actually met on a commercial shoot where we were both caddies, and I was the caddy for the guy with the good golf club, and he was the caddy for the guy with the lame golf club, and he had to keep going into the bush and all that stuff, the brush, to get, you know, the ball back. And I was like, you should try a Callaway golf club, you know, and we were both, like, it was such a stupid job, but we really bonded and became, like, you know, great friends from it, and, you know, eventually writing partners.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And now... what, of course, do you like the acting more than you do the directing, or have you now?
It's like it's so tough. Like, what I love so much about it is the Renaissance kind of thing about it. Like, you know, like being able to do different things for different projects. I love, like, with 6 month rule, I act, write, and direct it, and you know, my company produces it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by extension, I'm a producer. I love that. You know, putting a team together and seeing the finished product and knowing. That if you don't like it, that's my fault.
Yeah.
I take full responsibility. I like this movie, you know, and this is exactly what I set out to make. That being said, like this movie Favor, I acted in it for, you know, writer-director Paul Osborne, and there's so great to have someone else driving the ship, you know, and just being like, all right, it's your film, let's, you know, let me give you the performance that you want or need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're both satisfying in a different way. I wouldn't trade either one of them, you know, for the other, if that makes sense. I like the idea that I can write for somebody for hire, or I can write something that I want to make, or I can, you know. The only thing I haven't done yet is direct for somebody else, which I feel like I'd have trouble with.
You know? Write somebody else's script, or for a studio or something.
Yeah, for a studio. Like, I've written scripts for people, and that's different. Like, it's like it's kind of like acting in that I'm just trying to deliver what you need to make
your
project.
Vision,
it's your vision. I'm just here to, you know, to help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But with directing, like, I've always seen it as, you know, I guess I'm a director-producer in that I see the entire project as one thing. And I think it would be difficult at this point for me to direct someone, a film for a producer who's my boss.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm not saying don't hire me for that, America. If you'd like to hire me for that, my phone number is 310. No, I'm just kidding.
But now, do you see yourself? You think you could direct something you're not in? Like if someone just hired you as a hired director?
Totally. My film Weather Girl, which is my second feature, I think I'm in for. The only reason I'm in Weather Girl at all is because we had this great actor who was there, and I was basically asking him to improvise this entire reaction to what's happening on these monitors, right? And he's like, "Well, who am I talking to?" This is Rico Colantoni, who's like, you know, famous from Veronica Mars and Just Shoot Me, and he's genius. And he's like, "Who am I talking to?" And I'm like, "Well, we'll put something in here, somebody in here for you." And he's like, "Somebody that can't talk." Great. All right, I'll just talk to myself then, I guess. And I'm like, "I'll sit here. You know, I'm SAG, and I know the movie, so I'll just kind of lead you through it instead of being on set." And that's the only reason I'm in that movie at all. But yeah, I mean, that was a great experience in its own right, you know. Just directing. But I always feel like I'm in it whether I am or not, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah. And now, you're moving to New York. Yes. Are you gonna continue writing, or are you're thinking of like doing acting out there? What's the plan?
The big plan is to do exactly what I do here, only there. I've always loved the city so much, and the city sounds like such so pretentious. I didn't mean it that way. Forgive me, America.
You're so very retro.
I know. It's like wow. Well, that's just because of my Cosmo and my shoes. I've always wanted to get back there since I left at 19, and LA is a great town for the business, and if you love the beach and hiking and all this stuff, it's beautiful. I don't like that. I like overcast and rain, and I like to sit in my room and sulk and have my Jameson and, you know, complain about the crimes in the world. And I feel like I'm just more at home in New York. And now with 6 month rule coming out on DVD and it, you know, having caught fire a little bit, I feel like this is a really good time to do it. I've got some writing jobs lined up, and you know, also it's just about, I'm tired of talking about it. I found that so much in my career has been just taking the reins and doing what I want to do and just seeing what happens. And I haven't regretted any of it yet. But the truth is, like with this business, I can just get on a plane and come back and be like, "Hey, you've never met me. I'm Blaine Weaver. I'm new in town.
Just head over to Oakwood for a couple of weeks."
They're fully furnished apartments. You know this, right?
Yeah.
We got movie stars in the pool. I hear that Free Willy kid still hangs out there.
He just goes for the pool on the weekends. You could just show up to the Oakwood and just be like, "Hey, I just moved out from New York. What's going on here, guys?"
Yeah. So this is the Oakwood.
Clean slate.
Clean slate, exactly.
All right. Well, very cool. Guys, any questions? You guys want to ask Blaine before he leaves to New York?
It's not like he's going to another planet.
This is it. That's it. That's all we got.
It seemed very final, doesn't it? God.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's get going on the list because I think this is the very cool list. Adam, you're having troubles with your mic, I feel.
Are you okay? I don't know. I'm just having troubles in general.
I feel like you were dropping ice and...
Yeah, I'm just out of it today. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. Maybe it's affecting me that you're leaving. Yeah. That's what it's probably.
You want to talk about it? You want to like get some stuff off your chest?
If I start crying, I'm not going to be able to do my list.
God, that would be so awkward.
We still haven't had anybody cry on this podcast.
What? That just means you're not trying hard enough. Yeah.
All right. So we picked, again, New York films, whether they're based there or, you know, they're about New York, just New York films in general, which was a great topic. You picked it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So why don't you give us your number five, your first pick?
Okay, so all right. My being that I'm moving to New York, and that's kind of like where my head is at right now. My list goes through the entire life of me and what I know to be New York. And so my number five is a great film known as Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Wow. I like that.
Thank you.
That is a surprising opener.
I love it. It's not a good movie, but I love it. And I don't know if you remember, but it's a totally stupid sequel that had very little to do with the first movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's a guy named that's supposed to be like Donald Trump who runs this, you know, CNN kind of thing from a high rise in New York. And the gremlins take over the building and every floor. You know, it's a movie theater and there's a story. Yeah, anyways. Before I had ever gone to New York, this is what I thought it was. And so that's it. That I love that film. I feel like I'm getting judged.
No. I think everyone in this room. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Gremlins.
I love Gremlins too. You say you don't. It's not a good film, but I
still love it. I love how much he's making fun of the first one when like she's got the President's Day joke or whatever, yeah, where she's making fun of the Christmas story.
I completely forgot about that. She's talking about
Lincoln's birthday, and I'll just. What's uncle, or not the uncle, grandpa from the Munsters.
Right. Who's the host of the late night show. Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, it is, it's very meta, you know, and it's, again, pretentious asshole. but it is.
No, it's okay. Meta's an okay word. It's just been co-opted. Everyone knows meta now.
But that movie just got destroyed when it came out. Like, I remember saying that I liked it and reading a review, you know, in the Shreveport Times or whatever it was. It was just like, that's awesome. And now, it was on cable not long ago, and I'm like, man, this movie's so great.
Now, ridiculous. Where did the first one take place? What city was the first one?
One's in, like, a small,
like Grover's Corners or something like that.
Yeah.
And in this one, like the guy from the first one, it like moved out, got a new job. Billy.
Billy moves to New York.
Phoebe Cates, right?
Yes, I don't remember her name. Her character's name.
Hey, she's Phoebe Cates.
Zach something is the guy's.
Zach Galligan. Yeah.
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 I'm impressed by that.
Well,
I did that. Pull. I don't have an iPhone in front of me, people. I pulled that out. Zach something.
He's in this and he's in Waxwork. I love Waxwork too.
What's that?
Oh.
Waxwork?
Waxwork. It's a horror movie where like the waxwork comes to life and you have to feed victims to the waxwork so they'll all come, all the monsters will come out.
No, that movie's stupid. Whoa. Gremlins 2 New Batch is awesome. I don't know what Waxwork is. Get out of here.
That's not real.
Now, where are we at? Jenny, what is your number 5?
All right, so if we're going to go that route.
Well, wait a minute. I like how you just set the tone that's a really fun tone. Because I was wondering, like, oh, is everyone going to go serious? I know Adam's going to, like, put some Woody Allen in there. So I'm like,
you don't know that. Well, you don't know me.
I'm pretty sure. You know his life.
I'm pretty sure. At one point, I was going to go with, pick a movie from each borough.
We could just all do a movie.
That would have been good.
But I'm like, but then I'm not picking, you know, my favorite. So
I was just assuming all your movies are going to be by Scorsese.
Well, I could have gone that way, but yeah. No. What is your number 5?
All right, so I'm going to go with my number 5, 1984's The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes.
That's the one I'm going to do for my
number
5.
What a great movie.
It is. It's one of the best Muppet movies, I think. There are a lot out there, but I think this is... I would have to go The Christmas Carol, and then this one's like right underneath
it. Wow, really?
Yeah.
Over the first Muppet movie? That's a bold statement.
I feel like I've seen this one more. That's why. I actually...
They do seem to show this one on TV more.
The original, I actually watched probably just for the second time over Christmas, this past Christmas. Yeah, I feel like I hadn't seen it since I was like real, like a kid.
I only owned the Muppet movie.
The original one.
But I remember the Great Muppet Caper. We watched that at arts camp all the time.
Oh, that was a good one too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Lady Holiday. And Charles Grodin.
Gotta be honest, the Christmas Carol comes way at the bottom for me.
Oh, really? I love that one. That one's one of my favorites.
See, I think it's an age thing.
It is, because that one came out like when I was young.
Because I'm old. Is that what you're saying?
That's the reason.
All right, that's
there you go.
Well, no, because we've had the Disney conversation too, where she prefers.
Right.
She prefers the newer, like the Little Mermaid, like Beauty and the Beast, and stuff like that. Whereas I like Alice in Wonderland, Sleeping Beauty. And the creepy ones,
yeah, the scary ones. Yeah. Where you,
Dumbo.
In Disneyland, you end up in like hell in all those ones.
Oh, that's so great.
They're scary.
I've only seen A Christmas Carol. I've never seen any other ones. Yeah,
never saw the first one.
I've never seen any of them.
He's never even seen the show.
Yeah, he doesn't like Muppets.
He wouldn't even go see the new one. Did you even see it?
I like the Muppet Babies.
if you like the Muppet Babies, you would like the Muppet Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's 30 minutes. Give it a chance.
Yeah.
See one.
I mean,
the pilot.
Just for all the cameos, the cameos are what make the movie so great. Like, I mean, in Muppets Take Manhattan, you've got Joan Rivers at the makeup counter with Miss Piggy. Actually, that's the only one that comes to the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't even remember off the top
of my
head.
That waitress was hot. I remember that.
Yeah, look, I don't know if she's a cameo, but she was hot.
She wasn't a cameo, but she was fun.
She's a main character.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I
because she's
feel
like the waitress at the restaurant where the Muppets hang out.
I'm getting too many mix.
Oh, yeah,
signals.
Brooke Shields, Liza Minnelli, Elliot Gould. God, there's so many good people. So, I think in the original one, there's a lot.
He has a great cameo. He's the tramp in the park.
Oh, that's right.
So should I start with one, or if I'm going to start with them?
I mean, I think you should go in chronological order.
Yeah, why not?
All right.
They're all good. I think you should just spend
you could
whole
probably
day on it.
Skip Muppets in Space, though.
Oh yeah, I don't know that I've seen that one.
Is it like Jason in Space? Jason X?
Worse.
Oh wow.
Jason Takes Manhattan is one of my choices. No, it's not.
What if it's in somebody's list? You may spoil somebody's list.
I'm sorry.
All right,
well, it's not on my list.
Okay, well, that would be the only worry. All right, my number five is from 1979, and I picked a movie, a little cult movie. I guess not a cult. Everybody seems to know about this movie, The Warriors.
Great movie.
Have you seen this, Jenny?
No.
You need to sit down and watch some Warriors. Basically, it takes place in the future, dystopian New York, and basically New York is run by gangs. For the people who haven't seen it, there's a meeting of like the main gang, the Riffs, the New York City Riffs, and basically they want to join all the gangs so they become one big gang and take over New York. And something happens. The Warriors are framed. The Warriors are from Coney Island, and they have to get from New York City to Coney Island. While they're being like hunted down by every other gang in every other territory. It's fun, it's campy, it's everything I wish for. So it's Walter Hill.
It's been years. I can't really, I feel like I have nothing to add to this except for it's awesome and you should watch it and I should see it again because I have no reference point except for him being like screaming from the car in his weird lady voice.
With the beer bottles?
Yeah, you know, whatever it was.
He's clinking the beer bottles and he's going, Warriors, come out and play.
creepy.
Yeah, he's really creepy.
It's David Patrick Kelly?
Yeah.
Is that him?
Yeah.
That wasn't from memory. That was from IMDb, just so everyone knows. I forget his name all the time.
From Commando.
Please, Sully. So good. Yeah. Commando. Well, I remember he's in The Crow.
Oh, that's right.
T-Bird.
That's right. Damn him. But yeah, this movie's really fun and it's directed by Walter Hill. And I think Tony Scott was... Tony Scott committed suicide. He jumped off a bridge in L.A. And the reason he knew the bridge was because he was scouting. He was going to remake it and set it in L.A. And that's how he knew the bridge. So if it wasn't for Warriors, maybe he wouldn't have committed suicide.
No kidding. That's interesting.
Wait, how he knew the bridge? What does that mean?
He was scouting locations.
Oh, that's where he knew how to get to the bridge?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. He was just scouting locations because, you know.
He was going to use it in Warriors.
Yeah.
Got it.
So. Interesting.
That's a.
We'll never get a Warriors remake now.
I know.
Damn. We might.
Late. Oh, don't you worry about that. They will rape and pillage every great movie ever made.
A Warriors video game?
Yeah, it was actually kind of fun. It was by Rockstar Games.
Okay.
Yeah. What is your number five?
I still have no idea where to go with this list. I feel like I should just.
Jason Takes Manhattan.
No. That movie, that's an inappropriate title. He's in Manhattan for like 5 minutes of that movie.
Does that whole movie take place on a boat?
No, he gets his ass kicked once he gets to Manhattan.
Should have been called Jason on a Boat.
Yeah.
Jason on a Boat.
let me find my list and figure out.
I feel like that's a good like viral video. Like Jason and like T-Pain or somebody like singing.
Yeah.
Jason on a Boat.
Okay. I'm going to go with this movie from 1949.
Yeah, aren't we a fancy band?
Well, I might have to tailor this list to make up for a list I'm probably never going to get. It's a musical called On the Town.
You get your list. I just won't be here for the list.
So we're just going to take over your office back here and record without you.
When I first made my list, every movie on my list was musicals.
There's a lot of musicals that take place in New York.
But then I was like, Ricardo's going to hate me, so I'm not going to hate you.
I don't hate that you guys talk about musicals.
No, you just hate musicals.
Yeah.
But this is an amazing musical. Because it's Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra and this other, I always forget the other guy's name, and they're sailors on leave in New York.
What is it called again?
On the Town. And like, so you know the episode of The Simpsons where they sing Springfield, Springfield?
Yeah.
That's
he did not hesitate. He knew that. Yes, I do. Yes.
Yes.
That is
episode
based
451,
on the song,
sure.
The opening song from On the Town. The opening song from this musical about New York, New York, when they get off the boat and the first thing they do is just start singing. And it's the stereotypical musical that you would hate where they're singing randomly out of nowhere and like they break in the song and someone talks to them and then they start singing again. But it's Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, yeah.
Being awesome in New York.
I'd like Frank Sinatra. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Very cool. And who's it directed by? Anybody we know?
It is directed by Stanley Donen and Gene Kelly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Tag teaming this bad boy.
Yeah, well, they did that a lot.
That's cool.
They were a go-to tag team.
Yeah, I like that.
They're like the 1940s equivalent of Macho Man and Hulk.
Oh, all right.
They're just all the time.
Just all the time tech.
You're speaking of Randy Savage.
Yes.
Okay, just to clarify.
Yeah. Is there another official Macho Man that I'm unaware of?
Well, I am at the table. To the Goldman High
School. Sorry, I didn't mean to disappoint you.
Yeah.
What is your number four?
Well, I'm changing it. I'm changing it. I'm not going to tell you what it was because I don't want to ruin anybody else's. But I'm going to go based on my arc of me going to New York, Brothers McMullen.
Oh.
Because Brothers McMullen, while I think a flawed film, is also changed everything. That and Clerks and a couple of other movies really made independent film like a viable option, you know, for guys like me, you know?
Yeah.
The idea of, like, writing and directing and starring in something, you know, albeit, you know, Ed Burns is arguably a little prettier than me. Arguably. But, you know, it's like just doing that was such a cool accomplishment at that time. And
but I feel like you could take him in a fist fight.
Oh, I feel so too. But, you know, he's Irish, you know. He's like, he's one of these Irish, you know, Brooklyn guys. Okay, so who knows?
Here we go. If he's sober, you could take him. If he's had a couple drinks, you can't take him.
I mean, personally, an Irish Brooklyn guy against a redneck Shreveport guy, I think it'd be a good brawl. I really do. Like, whatever. Like, I tip my hat to him.
Yeah. What would be the venue? New York or Louisiana? Like,
we'd have to find
a middle ground.
We'd have to find a middle ground.
We'd have to go, like, Arizona desert.
Yeah. I like that. It would have to be like a
no
ultimate
advantage.
Street fighter kind of scenario where we're in space or some shit. that would be fair.
Or snow, no shoes, no shirts, just jeans.
Yeah.
Fist fight.
Let me say this. Right now, I think definitely I could take him because he's been Hollywood for he's been too pampered for too long. When he did Brothers McMullen, it's a toss up.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, I thought it was great, talky, smart, yeah, you know, a little predictable, but, you know, whatever. It's a romantic comedy that was done on a shoestring. And I heard him in an interview one time, and he said one thing that always stuck with me, which was, he's like, look, man, we shot part of that movie in the summer, and then in the next scene, it's snowing outside. Nobody ever notices, but if they're paying attention to that, then you've messed something up. And I thought that was really good advice for a young, you know, independent filmmaker.
Yeah, and I've heard a couple of interviews with him. I like the guy. I like his method, like his way he goes about making films. And even now, like his last two movies were shot like on the 5D. Like,
yeah, he's just really all about low budget, shoestring budget right
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
he's redefining the business model. He really is. Like him and his Twitter followers basically finance his movies because he just goes straight to iTunes. He sells $1 million worth of you know iTunes like that, and has a really cool back and forth with other filmmakers and fans and you know retweets with people. You know, he's really smart. He's on the cutting edge of it. He and Kevin Smith really have cashed in the most, I think, of like filmmakers on the new model.
Yeah, and like really using like social media to kind of fund their films.
Absolutely.
Too.
And you know, you make a movie for $20,000 and you're Ed Burns. It's like that's a good deal for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I, you know, I feel like I kind of talked shit about the movie a little bit, but I like that movie. I think it's a good movie. I think it's his best. I really
do. Yeah, really. Did you see Sidewalks of New York? I think I liked that a little more.
I saw Sidewalks of New York. Yeah, it wasn't, like, I feel like it was a little hokier, to be honest. Like
it was a little too Woody Allen-ish for my taste.
But like, just off the mark a bit, you know, of the best Woody Allen. Like, obviously, Woody Allen has a big scale, too, but I think it would fit. If I saw it and you told me Woody Allen directed it, I'd believe you. I just wouldn't put it up in his top.
Yeah.
Brothers McMullen, that family dynamic, I feel like at that point was something we hadn't really seen in cinema in a really long time. You know, the three brothers and the dad and the, you know, and then he did it for the next two movies and it got a little stale. Yeah.
Very cool. I like that. I wasn't expecting that. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Jenny, what's your other musical or Muppet movie?
let me see. Oh, I didn't put a musical for my number four. Don't worry. They're my Anyways. All right. So my number four is I went with a 1953 How to Marry a Millionaire.
What?
That was more disturbing to you than a musical.
Yeah. I was like, what's going on?
That's not a musical?
It's got like Marilyn Monroe and Betty Grable and Lauren Bacall. And it's about three women who move into this like fancy smancy sublet in one of those fancy smancy New York towns, Manhattan probably. And they're trying to figure out how to marry really rich guys. And it's old fashioned and I love it and it's cute and it's Marilyn Monroe and she's adorable.
That's not where Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend is from?
Isn't that Gentlemen Prefer Blondes?
Yeah. Oh,
yes, mm-hmm. It is. Okay.
Yeah.
It shows how much I know about Marilyn Monroe movies. Those. No, it's great. I haven't seen that. I'll check that out.
It was on, the way I saw it was Netflix a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's still on there, but I'm sure those old ones. It better be. I know, right?
Do you guys ever play Netflix Russian Roulette? Is you hit the remote and you kind of just hit buttons left, right,
oh,
left,
was
right,
like,
left,
is
right.
There a...
And then you hit play and then whatever's playing, you got to watch all the way through.
I've never done that.
I don't want to do
it's
that.
Pretty...
That sounds kind of scary.
It's scary.
That sounds awful.
Sometimes
there's
stuck
a lot of bad stuff on there.
Housewives of New York City.
Oh, gross. Yeah?
Gross.
But you got to do really drunk to really appreciate it, so.
Yeah.
But it's a fun game. So, Marilyn Monroe. I kind of dig her in some stuff. Some stuff I'm like, I don't get her appeal.
Sometimes. Yeah, and I like the other. I mean, she's just a pretty face. She's
yeah.
not the best. I mean, best yeah. actress. Sorry,
Lauren Bacall.
Yeah, Lauren Bacall is fantastic.
People are upset by that.
I know people are going to be really mad at me.
What? That you said that she's just a pretty face.
Yeah, she is just a pretty face.
Yeah. You said it too.
It's true. I back up that statement. All right. Well, that's a good pick. I didn't
cultural phenomenon. Cultural phenomenon. Or phenomenon.
Phenomenon. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
I'm gonna have some more Jack Daniels.
Yeah. I need a refill, too.
All right. Well, go. Have at it.
It's my turn.
You're
then.
Not
oh,
allowed.
No, it's your turn. It's my turn. I can refill my drink.
Have at it. And you know what? Give me a cup and fill me up, too, while you're at it. All right.
Well, I got to drink the bad one.
For my number four. Oh, Old Crow. Well, hopefully, we keep mentioning it, but hopefully Jack Daniels will sponsor our podcast.
It'd be amazing.
Two
They've
podcasts
been sold
ago.
Out of that yeah. pre-made Jack and Coke mix
Blaine,
since the last
we
time
this
I was here.
Delicious elixir by the great people of Jack Daniels. And it was Jack Daniels mixed with cola. Pre-mixed.
Pre-mixed?
Delicious.
That's made up.
No.
That's like peanut butter and jelly in the same jar.
Better. Because that tastes like crap.
I bet it does.
But this was a delicious elixir. Maybe Jack Daniels people will sponsor this podcast. Okay, my number four from 1976, Taxi Driver.
Good one.
It's just such a fun movie, yet it's really disturbing. But I that's how I felt watching that movie as a kid. I was like, oh, I'd never want to go to New York to meet Harvey Keitel with his weird hat and weird prostitutes. And
can I just have a sidebar where I say this could have also just been called the Harvey Keitel list?
Oh, yeah.
I could have made a list of nothing but Harvey Keitel movies.
Yep. Yeah. I wish I could do like a really good Harvey Keitel like impersonation. He's got like such a good personality. But for those people who haven't seen this movie, he's a war vet. He goes fucking nuts. He tries to save Jodie Foster, who's a prostitute, and gets a little crazy with Harvey Keitel. That's all you need to know. I won't spoil the rest. There's really cool scenes with Cybill Shepherd.
Cybill Shepherd, yes. Yeah. And
Albert Brooks.
Albert Brooks is amazing.
Peter
this movie.
Boyle is in this as
yep,
well.
Yeah. And he's great too, man. Yeah. He's
this,
really
this was
good
weird
in that
because
movie.
I had just coincidentally before I saw this movie, I had seen I was really young. I had seen A Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what the fuck is Frankenstein doing in this movie?
Yeah.
It's freaked the hell out of me. But yeah, I saw this way too young. And it was,
I think that's the best way to see this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah. Where you're like, what the hell is happening? A really young Jodie Foster, really disturbingly young Jodie Foster. And
it's brilliant. Yeah. I think it hits every note. You know, it's like, you know, it's it's one of the best movies ever. I personally think. One time when I was young, Bacall and I went to New York, and we were in New York, and he was like, we have to go to Times Square, and I'm like, okay. And we walked up, and there was a peep show, and he's like, we have to go in here. And I'm like, that's gross. And he's like, no, we have to go in because Giuliani had just gotten, you know, it was pushing forward this whole cleanup Times Square thing. And he's like, it'll never be like this again. And I didn't really know what he was talking about. Like, I was certainly not savvy to the New York politics at the time. But he was like, you know, he was a big fan of Taxi Driver. And we went, and there's, you know, peep show scenes and weird stuff. And we went and saw some of the weirdest shit I've ever seen in my life. Like, burned in my brain kind of stuff. But he was absolutely right. Like, next time I came to New York, it was Disney-fied. It was different, you know? And if you want to see New York, like, 1996, you know, backed to the 60s, really. Like, that's Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
You know, when I was living there, you know, not like it was in the 70s rough, but it was rough, you know? And now it's like, it's just so... It feels so safe, and maybe I'm mistaken. I'm not, you know. But.
No, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I went, I was there for like Y2K, so 2000. I was there for New Year's, and I watching all these movies. I'm like, oh man, it's gonna be seedy. It's gonna be nuts because this is the New York I knew from movies.
Right.
So going there and going to Times Square, and it's like this is there's tourists everywhere. This is so safe. This is so. I could walk alone, you know, like, it was so different. It was nothing like, you know, like the movies.
I think Giuliani really changed the city. And of course, you know, 9/11 changed it again.
Yeah.
But like, it was already on this path of like cops on every corner and blah, 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 you know, which I think is great. And at the time when it was happening, you know, I was certainly part of the liberal, you know, group that was like, damn it, blah, 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 you know, but it's so nice now.
Yeah.
The city seems so much safer than it did even when I was there in 94.
And, well, I never been to a peep show. What the hell is a peep show?
Okay. All right, it's really weird. All right, so it's in, this is topical, because it's in Taxi Driver, but you put your coins in, you go to the thing, and you give them money, and they give you these tokens, and you put the tokens in, and literally like a metal door rises up between you and the dancers. And there's plastic, you know, between you two. But, like, we did it. And, you know, there's two just naked girls hanging out there and just being like, which one do you want? Which one do you want? And we're both foreign. And, like, you know, then there's the pressure of, like, you know, I don't want to point at one of the naked.
Yeah.
So shyly, I'm like, you're good. You're good.
You should have manipulated evens or odds.
I know. And what's weird is that you can see, it's in a circle, right? So you can see the other dudes across the way, right?
That's
so creepy. They go and they dance and they get right up to the plastic and they know when your time's running out. So when your time's running out, it gets really good. And then, oh no, the door drops shut and you have to put more coins in really quick. And that, I believe that's in Taxi Driver.
Yeah. But it's funny because I've never met anybody who's actually, you know, done it. This is really interesting.
The base enough to actually walk into it.
Now, question. Now, were you and Michael in the same fucking booth?
No, we weren't. No.
Okay.
No. And, like,
you know,
again, we didn't know what the hell we were talking, we were doing. You know, this was purely like trying to, like, well, we should do this moment in history.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're going to, it's like, no, that feels weird. All right. But. But only slightly less weird was me being able to see him across the way.
Were you guys like,
yeah, I was like, what are we doing? You know, and it was ridiculous.
No, but it's like an Armed and Dangerous where it just helps one of you think.
You just made an Armed and Dangerous reference.
Yeah.
Oh, Eugene.
I feel like I'd be playing like Rock, Paper, Scissors for, like, with him across the way. Like, one, two, three.
It was weird. It was horrible and weird. But exactly that feeling of like dirty, you know, that Taxi Driver instills. You know, you with the thing, you just leave kind of feeling like, well, that was weird.
Like you have to take a shower.
Yeah, you do. I think so.
It's funny because like reading Paul Schrader's like Taxi Driver script, it's such a good like way to learn about screenwriting, like just to see like his like detail in his writing and like how he describes like the city and the streets. It's pretty detailed and it's a great read. Like on its own, apart from the movie, it's a great read as a script.
I've never done that. I should do that.
It's a really good script. So that's my number four, Taxi Driver.
I'm surprised that that's so low on your list.
Yeah, well, you took mine, by the way. I had
really?
That higher up, but I'm gonna pull a lateral.
Uh-oh. all right, what's your number four?
I still don't know. Hold on one sec. shit, I don't know where I want to go with this list at all. There's so many good movies. I'm just going to throw, all right, random Scorsese from 1977. New York, New York.
All right. Scorsese's musical. That's a weird pick.
Is that the musical?
Yeah.
Liza I've never seen that.
I really love it.
Do you really?
It's really weird. It's a little long, but it's... So, imagine gritty Scorsese realism, but with a Busby Berkeley setting.
I can't do that.
That's what it is. Because you'll have, like, these amazing fake, total, like, their sets. And then, like, you've got Robert De Niro just tearing the shit out of his set. Like, there's a scene where they're throwing him out of this bar. And it's this big, elaborate, mirrored hallway that they're throwing him out of. And it's just... It's beautiful and disturbing all at the same time. And it's just about this, like, tumultuous relationship between him. De Niro plays a saxophone player, and Liza Minnelli is a singer. And they hook up on... VJ Day, I guess, like in New York.
Yeah.
And like they meet.
It's cool.
And it's a really weird sort of journey on their relationship as they're just struggling with each other, with trying to be with each other, but also they both want to be famous.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, but it's Scorsese, and it's a musical, and it's so you just have to watch it because it's
De Niro
so strange.
Sings?
He doesn't sing. He plays the sax. Liza Minnelli's doing most of the singing.
That's the only Scorsese I haven't seen. And for
is,
reason. For
is there reason. Do they break into song, or is it all like in the context?
It's all in the context. So you would be okay with it, because it's not like, oh, hey, we're randomly singing now.
No, see, these are the musicals I like.
Yeah.
Where it's all in the context of the movie.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, we're at an audition and I have to sing now. And that's how they kind of hook up, is he ends up dragging her along to an audition, and he's not getting anywhere with him. Like, you don't think he's very good. And she starts singing along with him as he's playing, and that kind of gets them the gig.
Imagine if a Taxi Driver was a musical.
That's basically what this is. Except it's the earlier, it's the 40s, so no peep shows yet.
No peep shows yet. Very cool. All right. It's literally
see that.
The only movie I haven't seen is Scorsese, so.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's really long, but it's just gorgeous. And like he uses these amazing stage sets. Like, they do stuff in New York, but a lot of it is set on stages, and it's gorgeous.
That's cool. All right, what is your number three?
All right, so number three, I love, and I feel like it's a completely underrated film, all right? It's a movie called The Paper.
Yes.
Michael Keaton kills in this movie. Like, to me, this is it's the Michael Keaton part. Like, he gets to be Michael Keaton, you know? It's like Beetlejuice, yeah, he also has to be weird. Batman, he also has to be straight man. It's like, this is full-on Michael Keaton running, you know, and that whole movie, it runs on a time. Okay, so it's about the editor of a New York tabloid, and it's in 24 hours, and it's about getting this one story, you know, before the paper breaks. And this one day, he's going to get it right. He's decided, bless you or whatever.
Excuse me.
He decides that they're wrong every other day, but today, he's not going to print a lie. Today, it's going to be something true. And, like, Glenn Close is in it as, like, you know, the bean counter, and Randy Quaid is in it as, like, the beat reporter, and it's great. And it's New York, and it's, like... It's got one of the best lines that I still use to this day, all the time, and it's basically Michael Keaton is married to Marissa Tomei, and you know, he's always late for everything because he's the editor, and like he lives on this 24-hour news cycle thing, and she's having dinner with his parents, and he's an hour and a half late, blah blah blah, and she always throws out these scenarios to him, right? You know, and hypotheticals, and he's like, "Oh, I don't want another hypothetical," and she's like, "No, hypothetical. Here it is. Okay, someone puts a terrorist breaks into the paper and puts a gun to my head and says, 'I'm either gonna kill your wife or I'm gonna blow up the newspaper.' What do you do?" And Michael Keaton says, "Well, I don't know. Let me think about it. Of course I choose you. Of course I choose you." And she's like, "That's the point. It's never a big decision like that. It's little decisions every single day." And I thought that was great writing, you know? Like, yeah. I love that. Anyways, I love that fucking movie.
It's so, so good. I just rewatched it recently because it was on Netflix. And I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot how much I love this movie.
And it died. Robert Duvall. Like, it was killed when it came out. Yeah.
Oh, that's because it's so good. Is it Ron Howard?
It's Ron Howard,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's amazing. The cast, they all work so well together.
Yeah.
But yeah, Keaton's energy, he just carries you through. Like, he's going to the meetings. And he's never off. Like, even he's at the meeting. I love when he's at the meeting and he steals the tip. Off the guy's desk, and it's so good. It's such a good movie. That's
very
I can't
cool.
believe it. I didn't even
I haven't
that.
Seen that. You think it's still on Netflix? Was it a long
might
time
still
ago?
Be. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
But it's so good. If it's not, you should find somewhere to rent it.
It feels like early 90s.
I feel like this movie was on like a list we had earlier, like Film Discoveries, I think. I think Bob Freelander brought it up.
Oh,
Brian Sauer, I think.
It's all a blur. We talk about so many movies.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that's very cool. Totally awesome worth it. I think you'll like it because it's really crowd pleasing. And I think it died just because I think it might have been rated R. You know, and it feels a little bit like it's PG-13, but it's also the early 90s where that line is weird, you know. Mm-hmm. And anyways, it's great. And I feel like it really captures the pacing of New York.
You know what's so funny is that, like, 70s, 80s, like, the rating system was very, like, relaxed. So you had, like, some stuff where you even saw, like, boobs, but it was still PG-13.
Yeah.
But then, like, 90s got really strict. And there's some movies that you're like, they said fuck once. And, like, there was... like mild talk of sex, and it's like R, so it's weird with the ratings board.
It's still on Instant. You can still watch it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, nice. And it's 94. Cool. Yeah.
Well, that'll be our stream of the week. The paper.
Yeah.
Jenny.
All right.
Another musical. What is it?
All right. So my number three is 1979's All That Jazz.
That is so amazing. I'm so happy that you know this movie.
I love this movie. It was so on Netflix a little while ago, and one of my ex-boyfriends is really big into musicals too. He's my ex, obviously.
Oh, that's the dancer movie kidding. With Rod.
Yeah, it's about Fosse's life.
Yeah,
and that movie's great.
It's fantastic.
Roy Scheider.
Yes, and Jessica Lange is in it. You like her?
Yeah.
You like her?
It's barely a musical.
Yeah.
It's a musical because it's about making a musical.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it's so I love this movie so much. I went and saw it at the Arclight by myself.
Oh,
just so I could see it on the big screen.
It was
screen.
At the Arclight?
Yeah.
I would love to see it on the big screen.
So good.
That would be so awesome. Good. It's so well done.
That was on my list.
I love this movie so much.
I mean, it's great. It's about a womanizing, you know, Bob Fosse is like a famous choreographer who is like a womanizer and, you know, drug user and, you know, constant smoker, you know, and like how he's broken all these women's hearts and, you know, great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so like his it's not the breaking out in the song randomly. It's all motivated because it's either they're rehearsing a musical or they're mm-hmm. on stage doing that. Like that opening, the opening of this movie is them doing auditions for their new musical, and it's just dancers, and it's just him picking who makes it and who doesn't make it, and it's great. Hmm. But like, and then there's like one iffy musical number that you might not like, but because it's a dream sequence. But I mean, it's not random. He's dreaming.
It's kind of like the dream sequence always makes me think of in Greece, Beauty School.
Yes.
Frankie Avalon.
That one, yeah. That's what the dream sequence always makes me think of.
Greece, I've seen a little bit of because, like, just the credit sequence, I was like, oh, I'm over this movie.
At like six?
But Greece is the word.
At age six, I was so done with Greece. In the opening title sequence, I was like, screw this.
No,
I'm going to go watch Taxi Driver again.
Yeah, dude, my whole drama department went and saw Greece when they re-released it in theaters. We took over a theater.
Really? Yeah. Well, see, I had just seen like Outsiders. So like, I was like, whoa, what's going on here? Why are these guys singing? They should be, you know, shanking each other. Instead of like greasing up their hair.
Stay gold, pony. Stay gold.
So I got to check this movie out. It's got Roy Scheider, which Scheider. Roy Scheider is another different guy. Isn't he the guy from Dukes of Hazzard?
Oh.
I'd never watched Dukes of Hazzard.
Who am I thinking of?
Schneider. Oh, shut up. Yes, you did. Oh, wow, you're black. I didn't know.
I wasn't a Dukes of Hazzard.
I'm sorry. I'm from Louisiana.
I'm from Georgia.
They drive a car with the Confederate flag on it. It wasn't really on the top of my list of things to watch.
So there's Rob Schneider, who's the really bad
hot chick
comedy guy. Yeah. Right. And then there's Roy Scheider,
yes,
who's from Jaws. Mm-hmm. And then there's, oh God, I can't believe
I can't think of his
Bo Duke.
Yeah. Bo Duke.
What is his name?
Bo Duke.
And then there's Liev Schreiber.
Who doesn't get confused with any of them because he's Liev Schreiber.
Okay.
They all hit this kind of like glass ceiling of Schneider.
And then there's Maria Shriver.
John Schneider.
See, this
John
is,
Schneider.
These are I know the guy. If I look at the guy from Jaws, yeah, he's Roy. I go by Roy, just Roy, because I can't. I'm confused
just go
last names.
By Roy.
But Blaine, Yeah, true or false? Don't you always confuse Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott?
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Why? They're not the spelled names at all.
Have nothing to do no, with each other.
I agree. They I look do the same
completely
thing.
Different.
Yeah.
I'm like, is it Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney? And they're like, I don't know. You just lost me.
And the truth is, I really like both of them very much. Yeah. I'm like, I really respect both of their careers. It's like, oh, you did that, you know, that date movie. All right, that's a bold move, but you needed to do it. And it's like, you know, did that practice TV show.
I don't want to step on anybody's list, but the Cowboy Way, Dylan McDermott, is really good.
Wow, The Cowboy Way is a very good New York movie, actually. New York was a very big part of that movie.
Was Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah, and Woody Harrelson.
We're the Cowboys, right?
Yeah. And he's the bad guy.
We should have a...
But another... So there's a joke in The Candidate, or what? What's the Will Ferrell...
Candidate, yeah. Yeah, that's
The Campaign.
The Campaign. Campaign. Oh, you're right.
Candidates, I was like, Candidates Robert Redford. Right. In The Campaign, where they're doing all of the also knowns, like all of his AKAs, the Dylan McDermott character. One of his AKAs is Dermot Mulroney.
I feel like
so he acknowledges it himself.
Really,
he
knows.
That should be a trivia game for the podcast. Is it Dermot Mulroney?
Which one is in this movie?
Yeah. All right. Where are we at?
You're number three.
Oh, my number three. Okay, my number three is from 1969. Another CD New York movie, Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, was that on your list? Great one. It was not.
Okay.
God, it should have been. What a great movie.
Yeah, and it's just, this is why when I went to New York, I'm like, it's nothing like the movies. Because for me, like, this was, like, where this and, like, The Graduate, for me, like, really kind of, like, blew up Dustin Hoffman for me. Like wow, like, this is, look what this guy, he wasn't, like, a leading man type, and he was doing some amazing work, and especially this role, as Ratso Rizzo. Have you seen this movie, Jenny?
I don't think so.
Oh, Jenny, you got to get in on that. It's the first movie rated X.
That got nominated for an Oscar.
Theaters. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and
not
that
was
nominated.
Not the first movie rated X, but the first one that got
nominated.
You know, yeah.
And basically, it's you have Joe Buck, and who's like this Texas like cowboy, who's played by John Voight, and he's kind of like this fresh. Off the bus guy comes to New York and he meets like the seediest, like creepiest guy, Ratso Rizzo. And it's funny because he's one of my favorite characters in film because he's just so weird. My favorite scene is the improvised scene where he hits the car and he says, "I'm walking here." Everybody's done it. Everybody's parried that scene. And it's just a creepy movie. I don't like to watch it often because I don't like how it makes me feel, especially when they go to that party and it gets a little crazy.
You know, I was going to say the party. Why is the party the thing that makes me feel the grossest of that movie? Because there's so much stuff where, like, he's dying in the bus or they're living like animals in that thing. But that party, that's the thing that always makes me feel gross.
I'm glad somebody else feels the same way because it's like there's certain movies that – like that scene starts and I start to get like a little like sick, like, oh, did I eat something bad? What's going on here? And it's just like, that's the power of that film, that it makes you feel that way. I don't know what it is, but it gets a little creepy.
That movie is so visceral. Like there's a scene where Ratso tells Buck, is that his name?
Yeah.
Buck. Joe. Like, and by the way, you smell. And it's like, no lady's going to want to go with you if you smell like that. And it's like, wow, I can't believe they're talking about this, you know, because he's a gigolo. Anyways, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Good movie.
This is another movie I saw way too young.
Me too.
I think I saw this before I saw Taxi Driver, and I really should not have seen this
movie. Like it messed you up a little bit? Or
it didn't mess me up, but I was just like, no, I don't like this. I don't like this at all. This isn't a good. Right. No. This is just bad things. I should not have watched this movie. But I did.
That's maybe for me, what trips me up about the party scene. That it's like, well, I shouldn't be watching this. Well, maybe I saw too young.
Very early, even before the party scene, I was getting that bad vibes because it's like when he's having the flashbacks of all the dudes sneaking up on him and the girl when he's back home.
Right.
Yeah, it's just really disturbing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. It was just. And then also going from having the connection of everybody's talking with Forrest Gump to having it with to knowing like the source material, like, oh, this is a way darker take on like this song. It's just a whole different level to this song.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, you should check it out, Jenny.
It's prepared
to be disturbed a little bit.
It's really good.
Should I see it then?
No, yeah.
I think you're old enough now.
Okay, good. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
You can take it.
Adam, what is your number three?
I'm on my number three now. See, Jenny used all that jazz that was on my list. That kind of throws off my musical.
Oh, really?
My musical list.
Oh, man. Well, you better be careful.
I have to throw in a non-musical because...
Yeah, you should.
I'm pretty sure I'm not stepping on anybody's list, but Rent is not one of my top five favorite musicals that takes place in New York.
No. I thought originally I was like, I could just do an all musicals list and Rent would be one of them. But then I was like, it's not even one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
so I don't really want to.
It wasn't
that
great.
Wasn't that great. Musical's okay, but
see,
but
now the weird thing
that
is, where do I put this random non sequitur, non musical movie in this list? I think I might save it for first. So number three is also, it's just a kind of a non sequitur because if you know me well, you probably wouldn't think that I love this movie as much as I do. It's from 1973. And it's Godspell.
Oh. Hmm. Okay.
Never seen it.
Not many people have.
But I mean, there's a play. There's like, you know, I've never seen that either. Is that the one where he's got the Superman shirt on? Okay.
But you know who plays Jesus in this?
No.
Victor Garber.
Is that right?
Yeah. In the movie, it's Victor Garber.
Nice.
And he's really good. Like, it's a great cast. It's just, so Godspell is basically a retelling of... I guess the book of John. Oh, no, it's Gospel of Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
But they do it, and they're all dressed up like clowns, and it's, like, set in modern-day New York City. And they're just going through, and they're, like, telling parables and singing songs. And it's really bizarre, and you would probably hate it, because they're singing for no apparent reason in the middle of their day. But it's so... It's just, there's something about it where I can't look away. I love it so much.
There's nothing worse than singing in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
In morning, it's okay. Afternoon, it's okay. Middle of the day,
middle
fuck
of the
that.
Day. Like every
somebody
York,
starts singing in the middle of Monday afternoon when I haven't had my 5 hour energy,
and they're singing about God.
Yeah,
they're singing like,
get out of here,
prepare you the way of the Lord. And you're like, shut the hell up. It's Monday. I gotta go to work.
Yeah,
it's so good and bizarre and just weird because you got these random clowns reenacting the Book of Matthew.
So you have Victor Garber
as
a lead.
He's Jesus.
Oh wow.
He's playing Jesus, and then Lynn Thigpen.
Which is kind of like Tommy in this movie, right? Like, is it like that? I've always thought of it as The Who, as The Who's Tommy, mm-hmm. kind of, only different. Like...
I mean, Victor Garber looks kind of like...
I wonder what the timeline is, because to me it feels like...
Tommy might have been...
set the bar, and then Godspell came out. As an idea. But this is retrospective because I wasn't alive when either of those things happened.
And you don't have a computer in front of you.
I don't.
This is just off your head.
I'm just throwing this out there, you guys. It's just like, see what sticks.
If
you don't like it, we'll cut
actually,
this.
Actually, Tommy came after this.
Oh.
Son of
this
a
throws
bitch.
your
Tommy was 75.
Well, Godspell clearly I need to give Godspell a little time.
It's so I wish there were more pictures, like especially of Victor Garber, but there aren't. But yeah, he's playing like so he's Jesus and he's wearing a Superman shirt and like red suspenders. It's like Jesus clown Jesus meets Robin Williams.
Really?
He's wearing like suspenders and he's got like a clown like, costume on.
From Mork and Mindy stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really bizarre, but so much fun.
All right.
So weird. And they're just wandering around New York, and, like, they crucify him.
You think if I was, like, intoxicated, I'd
you would
like it?
If you were high or under the influence of anything, you would probably really love this movie.
All right.
I mean, or, like, if we just have a party and we put it on mute in the background.
And you play some different music?
Yeah.
All right.
You'd probably dig it.
Okay.
Because it's so weird. But you know Lynn Thigpen. She's in The Warriors.
Oh, yeah,
and she was the chief in Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. That's a
good show. That's a movie I
want to
see.
God, yeah.
She got so excited.
I always forget about that show until someone brings it up. I'm like, yeah.
So
that
good.
Was
makes
a thing.
Me so happy.
And whenever you're watching it, you're always like, I could put the flags on those states way faster than you guys can.
You're,
they were always so slow.
Slow, yeah.
I want a live action. Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
I've
a whole
it.
Other road.
no idea what we're talking about right now.
All right, Blaine, what is your number? What is it, two?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I feel like I've backed myself into a corner right now.
Uh-oh.
Because
uh-oh.
I made a little segue, and two of my favorite movies, I feel like somebody else is going to take for two at once. So I'm gonna save them. And I'm going to go... I'm torn. Okay. I'm going to go Miracle on 34th Street.
Wow.
Oh.
This is not my favorite movie. This is not my second favorite New York movie. But on this list, I feel like it more than any other movie defines what New York is, especially during Christmas. You know what I mean? That whole, you know, Macy's, Gimbel's, you know, competition and everything like that. I knew about that when I was just a little kid because of this movie. And now you go there and you go to Macy's and the windows mean so much to you now. And, you know, it's a good movie. Santa gets some letters and shit. And it's great.
Santa gets some letters and...
Yeah. You know, the girl from Rebel Without a Cause is, you know, cute. And yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about it. Comments, questions?
No. I
kind of want to know what your actual number two was then before you changed it. But I know I do. It's a great movie.
Well, give us your other number two, your alternate number two.
My alternate was Mean Streets, which I think great independent. See, you know, like
as much as I like Miracle on 34th Street, I'm gonna pretend like that was your number two just because I didn't put it on my list because it's not a musical.
Wow.
Dig.
But it's so good. There yeah. No, I love Mean Streets.
It's
way more than Miracle on 34th.
Mean Streets is a great movie, you know, but it's like, I don't know. I had a kind of a theme happening of like, you know, creating what I see as New York.
That makes sense.
You know, and picturing it. And Mean Streets is just, it's, you know, it's the worst thing that we have to deal with as independent filmmakers, which is like shooting in corners, stealing shots. And I tip my hat to the entire production of Mean Streets, but it still feels so uncomfortable. The whole thing is so claustrophobic because they're just trying to get this thing and get out of there. You know what I mean? Yeah. And Scorsese like has made up for it. But you know what I mean? Like I feel like he's fighting against that shoot the whole rest of his career. Like he just opens it up so much because it's so hard to grab those things. And I watch Mean Streets now and I'm like, you know, I know the behind-the-scenes stuff, that like this was the building his mother lived in when he's yelling and screaming and people all in the building are like yelling and calling the cops and, you know. It makes me so uncomfortable as a filmmaker to be like, you got one more take, go. And then getting to grab a great scene between Harvey Keitel, you know, and Robert De Niro, amazing, but having to do it under those conditions, so frustrating and claustrophobic for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that, and I feel like you're right. Like he spent the rest of his career going, like, "Hey, now I'm allowed to do this." So
yeah,
check out this New York.
Check out this scene, man. Yeah. We're gonna do every single angle for this. People are gonna yell for hours. I mean, even Raging Bull, like they own that thing. You know, people chew the scenery in that movie, and just like it's so satisfying.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like feeling like when I go to the theater, I don't like feeling like the set's going to fall down.
Yeah.
Like, I like that to be, like, out of my head and just, like, enjoy the movie. And as an independent filmmaker, my first movie, I feel very much like I'm painted into corners so many times. And it's like, this is the best we could do at that particular time and space.
Yeah.
Well, I think the perfect counterpoint to the claustrophobia of Mean Streets is all of the slow choreography. It's like, you know what? I'm going to make everyone slow down and you all have to move to the piano solo from Layla. No, you all have to move that slow into this shot. This is the perfect counterpoint to the movie. So, we're going to take our time with this one.
Yeah.
We got this, guys.
Yeah. I feel like that's a good 1-2 punch for your number two.
I feel like I cheated a little bit.
No. We do that all the time. There's a tie for number five, number four. It happens all the time. Jenny.
All right. So, my number two.
Love a musical.
It's 1967's How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
You know, I've never seen that.
I had never really even heard. I mean, I'd heard the name before, but I'd never really even thought to look into it until I found out that Daniel Radcliffe was in the Broadway musical. That's when I was like, oh, well, I should. And it was all over the Tonys last year. So I was like, oh, I should, you know, look into that and see more about this. And so it was on Netflix, the original, the 67 version. And I don't know if it still is, but it's a hilarious, hilarious musical on a guy that started off as like a window washer or something along those lines of like really low part. And then he has a book called How To, and it's like a guide to like becoming a really important business person. and he slowly makes his way up the ladder up to like the top of the business in very quick time. Like, it was just, it's just very funny the way he talks to everyone, and he just is like, oh yeah, I went to that school, and you know, he bonds with the CEO, and then he's like, well, I'm gonna bring you up to, you know, higher rank and all this stuff. It's hilarious. And
wait,
really,
what year is this from?
67.
I've never seen this.
It's so funny. There's this whole like scene of him trying to pretend like he went to this college with the CEO, that he like pretends like he knows the what do you call it, like
the dean?
No, the song of the school, the alma mater.
Alma mater.
And so he's like pretending like he knows the lyrics to it, and it's so funny. And so yeah, it's a good one. It's really good. It's who's the main guy? It's
Tony Curtis.
Robert Morse.
Oh, what am I thinking of?
How do you say his last name? But he's...
I've never seen this movie. What are you...
That's the guy.
From All My Children? Oh, he's... yeah. Robert Morse. He plays... he's the guy from Mad Men. He plays... Not Sterling Cooper, but the older guy.
The older guy?
Yes.
Oh, wow. You got a young picture of him?
Oh yeah, there's a younger picture of him, right?
Find that one.
This one right here.
I didn't know. It's funny.
This one right here is of the
actual movie.
Of the actual movie. He's the one on the right.
That's awesome.
Or the left. My other right.
This is really confusing the people who don't see what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, guys. Yeah.
So you found this movie because Daniel Radcliffe?
Daniel Radcliffe is in the version on Broadway.
Okay.
I don't know if he still is. He was last year, and it was a really big... Yeah, it's a musical.
Matthew Broderick did it like 20 years
ago. Yes, yes. And there's this whole like scene on the Tonys last year where I think it might be Robert Morse actually, and then Matthew Broderick and Daniel Radcliffe, all three of them came out and did the number together.
Oh, wow.
And it was like really cool and funny, and yeah, it was good. It's hilarious.
We should watch the Tonys, apparently.
I know.
I love the Tonys.
you and Michelle love the Tonys.
I love all award shows. I think that's the thing. I just love award shows.
Like, that is a girl thing.
Yeah. Unless it's AVNs, I'm not watching them. Finally, I get at him. He can't control himself.
He likes that one.
He likes that one. I just threw that one away. Like
you have to pay to watch the AVNs, don't you? They don't just air that.
No, they air them on Showtime.
Okay, so you do have to pay to watch them.
I guess you got to pay for the premium channel, but so I gotta check this out. But it's a musical, so I'm scared. So
yeah,
I might not check it out. Yeah,
you could just watch The Secret of My Success.
Yeah, I mean, it's
great movie.
All right, my number two is from 1974, another seedy New York movie, and it's Death Wish.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Very seedy.
So this is how I'll describe the movie. I like to describe movies sometimes with like the actors instead of the characters. So basically, Jeff Goldblum rapes and kills Charles Bronson's wife and daughter. And then and Charles Bronson's this architect in New York. And
Charles Bronson is an architect. Just the biggest stretch of the movie, just for the record. Go ahead.
He's got this. Well, first of all.
What's it called?
Death Wish.
Oh, what's okay. It called?
Oh.
I've never seen this one either.
Lady,
I'm a baby.
So Charles Bronson, he's got a sweet mustache. And that's all you got to know to start off. He's an architect. He lives in like a nice building. Jeff Goldblum breaks in with his like gang of thugs, and he's not looking for his mantra. He's just looking to rape, you know. So he breaks into Charles Bronson's house. His wife and his daughter are there, kills and rapes him. Charles and his wife dies. So Charles Bronson goes fucking nuts. He's like, fuck this. New York's fucking dirty. I'm gonna go crazy. He becomes a vigilante, starts killing thugs. He goes out looking for trouble, not waiting for trouble to come to him. He goes out searching for it.
Kills. It's like Batman Begins, but with Charles Bronson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He has to build up to it. He finds his way. He starts...
His first most, kill's like...
It's
kind
of
like...
It's the craziest build, though. He goes from a roll of quarters and a sock. That's his first weapon. That scene when he like puts the roll of quarters in a sock and just like whipping it around, he's all crazy. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then
that's crazy.
So then the whole movie, it's kind of like Batman. It is kind of like Batman Begins. Like the cops are like, who's vigilante? So they're searching for him, and like the cops are kind of catching up to him, and eventually like the police chief finds out it's him, and he's like, he finds out, and at this point, Charles Bronson's like, he's got his revenge. He's had his fill of vengeance, or you think he'd have.
Well, no, but the thing, okay, so he gets his fill, quote unquote, by killing a bunch of thugs, but he never actually finds Jeff Goldblum.
He never finds Jeff Goldblum, ever. The rest of New York never finds Jeff Goldblum. Yeah. By the way. So the police chief finally tracks him down. Charles Bronson is at the airport, and he's gonna flee because they're chasing him. You know, so the police chief comes to him, and he's like, Charles Bronson's like, I've been caught. You know. And the police chief says, like, he finds him admirable. Like, hey, you're trying to do something good. So he says, just don't come back to New York. And he's like, I'm going to Chicago. And he gets on a plane to Chicago, and bam, Death Wish 2 through 5.
There's 5?
Yes.
Oh my God. Does he a different city, everyone?
I think
he goes back to some places. Yeah. Because, like, basically...
You get right out of, like
Charles Bronson in Death Wish is like Jessica, or what's her name? The chick from Murder, She Wrote. Like, if you know her, someone's probably going to die.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, don't be friends with him because someone's going to get raped
or killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Charles Bronson's a badass in this movie. And so is Jeff Goldblum as a rapist number two. Yeah.
He is creepy.
Yeah. This is before he found his mantra. So that is my number two.
Well, that goes very well, that nice, seedy, dark movie, into my 1986 musical, Little Shop of Horrors.
This, surprisingly, I have seen.
Surprisingly. Yeah. Surprisingly, not that you've seen. Surprisingly, you're okay with it? Or that just that you watched it in the first place?
Just that I watched it.
Okay.
I kind of feel ashamed. Well, and I would pause it and then go and then come back.
But you watched the whole movie.
Yeah, I was in like this like Rick Moranis kick.
Okay.
Is that the one you're talking about? Or the Jack Nicholson?
No, the Rick Moranis. Okay. The Jack Nicholson one's not a musical.
Oh, and it's not.
No, the Jack Nicholson.
Oh, really?
So you might like the Jack Nicholson one.
Ooh.
It's a Corman B movie.
I'm going to check it out then.
And Jack Nicholson, I believe, plays, he's not even like Seymour. He plays the Bill Murray part.
Yeah, yeah.
The dentist?
God,
no. The boyfriend.
The sadist.
Yeah.
The sadist who goes to the dentist.
God, there's so many good people in this movie.
He's like, he wants Steve him not Martin. To use
no,
the gas.
No.
Bill Murray. Steve Martin.
Okay, Steve Martin's a dentist, yeah.
But yeah, I love the musical. Don't Feed the Plants.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so good. I always forget how good this movie is.
Yeah, but the backup singers, I mean, Ellen Green, who I'm off the top of my head, she's in this and one other movie. I mean, maybe she's done other stuff, but she's so good in both movies that I've seen her in. And Rick Moranis is the man. Steve Martin's awesome.
Yeah.
Bill Murray's great.
Yeah.
The cast alone is what made me see this movie, basically. And
did you like it?
I didn't hate it. Right. For me, again, it was the cast. It was that time in the 80s where I was like really into Steve Martin and like Rick Moranis and all these great comedic actors that I'm like, well, all right.
Tisha Campbell.
Yeah, Tisha Campbell. Big Tisha. I was going through my Tisha Campbell phase. and I sat through it and I was like, yeah, that was fun. I'll never have to see it again. But it's funny because
John Candy.
You know what? My nieces, they're like 6 and like, I don't know. I'm messing up their ages. They're like 6 and like 4.
They probably
5.
Shouldn't listen to this podcast anyway. It's explicit.
No, but they fucking love that movie. It's on Netflix and they fucking love this movie.
Fucking love it.
So they shouldn't listen to this because it's gonna be cursing. Like, and I'm like, why do you guys like musicals? But
they're fun. Because they're smart people.
So they don't like Mean Streets.
They don't like Mean Streets, and they don't like Death Wish.
Got no taste.
Well, once Martin Scorsese catches the bug from Mel Brooks and starts making musicals of his movies,
yeah, there you go.
We get the Mean Streets musical.
Yeah, yeah,
that'll be good.
Or the
Taxi Driver musical.
Yeah, the Taxi Driver.
I can't wait for You Talking to Me. The song.
Yeah. And it's gonna, how are they gonna do that? Like, he's gonna play both. It's gonna be a hologram, like the mirror part.
Well, yeah, I'm sure like they'll do something where the guy behind the mirror turns out to be a whole chorus line of dudes and they just do a big musical number all around the apartment.
All right, well, I'll wait for that to come out on Broadway. All right, so that was your number two.
Yes,
cool pick. All right,
I'm glad I had to think about it because it wasn't in the top five originally, but thank you, Jenny, for picking all that jazz.
Yeah, so you're welcome.
I remembered to do Little Shop of Horrors.
That's a good one. I love Little Shop of Horrors a lot.
It's a great movie.
I kind of forget that it's in New York just because it's such a soundstagey movie.
Yeah.
But the whole Skid Row downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Blaine, give us your recap and then your number one.
My recap?
Yeah, the recap of all your movies. So oh, number right. five. You're like, recap of my life. I moved
so many things around.
Started at the very beginning.
Yeah. But I'm going to say that number five was Gremlins 2, The New Batch, okay. which I'm very proud of. And number four was Brothers McMullen.
Yeah.
Number three was The Paper. Number two, I went with Miracle on 42nd Street because of the theme. And my number one, which I love, I feel like it's the only cliche one I'm throwing out, which I feel like is the perfect spot for number one, but Harry Met Sally.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I feel like is the, for me and this arc, the perfect New York movie. Like there's a, they really take advantage of the city in that. And there's a scene where Billy Crystal and, Meg Ryan, they meet up at Shakespeare and Company. And it's the third time they've met, and she's like, oh, he never remembers me. And he's like, Sally Albright. And it's just so New York to me, you know? And, like, they're all sitting there, and they're in the, psychological health section of, you know, Shakespeare and Company, you know? And they have this whole little, like, very sophisticated bonding moment, which, like, I lived on the Upper West Side when I lived in New York for a second, and, like, this was so cool to me, like these smart, successful New York-y types talking about things that aren't really important in their free time because they have no free time. Anyways, I love that movie, and I think it's a great New York movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that you picked it because it's not a musical, so it wouldn't have been on my list, but it is one of my favorite movies. I think, we talked about it on Romantic Comedy List also.
We did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Such a good movie all around. I love the scene at the museum when he starts talking funny.
Yeah, which was, you know, another great thing about film, you know, making your actors do the work for you. Mm-hmm. And, like, carry the, you know, Billy Crystal is great at, you know, improvising and, you know, taking the audience. And that's him. That's mm-hmm. all him mm-hmm. doing yeah. that. That's all him and Meg Ryan playing and then coming back around to the script, you know, which is one of my favorite things to do, to let people... actors play and then, you know, bring it back around organically to the thing, you know. Don't just go off this, you know, and I feel like this is a big problem with improvisation right now in today's cinema, you know, and I'm going to bash on Judd Apatow right now, but who I think has done great, great, great things for cinema. Excuse me, I really do. I think that, you know, he's found this amazing talent. He started this new kind of push towards a direction. It's great, but it becomes about the line and not about the story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you get Nora Ephron's script, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the script is so tight, the script is so good that you can go and play and then come back. And it's like it doesn't take anything away. It's actually creating the characters that are doing these things, mm-hmm. as opposed to who is this person? Well, who's funnier? Who can do the best, you know, one-liner right now? Mm-hmm. Let's just shoot for 7 hours. You know, it's like the David Lynch way of making a comedy, you know? that was my little rant. Go ahead. Well,
that's an interesting... I like that comparison, the David Lynch approach to comedy.
I feel like this movie was kind of like one of the... not the first movies, but it's kind of like when I started discovering, like, oh, especially since they break the fourth wall in, yeah. like, the interview scenes.
Yeah.
It was the first time where I'm like, oh, wow, like, okay, I started really kind of discovering, you know, trying to be a filmmaker, discovering, like, oh, wow, like, there's so many different ways to really tell a narrative story, like, different methods, and, you know, I dig this stuff, and after this, I feel like this was kind of the start of where everybody started ripping this off, and everybody started doing this. Like, this is, like, where The Office kind of grabs it from, you know, everybody.
Absolutely.
This is, like, this is what grandfathered it in, I guess.
I mean, I can't think of another movie that really...
Before this, no. I can't think of it.
That did the interview footage?
Yeah, yeah. I can't think of one.
That Reds. Wasn't shot in
Rent?
A completely...
Reds.
Reds? Oh.
Reds is before this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Sorry.
All right, show off.
I'm sorry.
Jerk.
I really like Reds.
All right.
We get it.
I'll give it to you. Did you guys know that Nora Ephron was married to the writer of Goodfellas?
Pileggi? Nick Pileggi? Or
yeah.
Is it Nick or Mitt?
Nicholas.
Yeah, Pileggi. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I heard him on a podcast, and he talked about her how they had different offices in their house, and they would write, and he's like, and then we would meet for dinner. He's like, but and that must have been an interesting household to live in, like just like
so romantic comedies in one wing and vicious crime dramas in the end.
Yeah, just I'm having trouble with the scene where they kill these two brothers and bury them in a ditch in Vegas. What do you think I should do, Nora? You should do interview footage with them talking about how they first met.
That's funny because he talked about like how she used to like read his like scripts and stuff, and how she would give him notes. And I'm like, that's really cool to have, like, you know, two like power couples like that to like kind of bounce ideas off of completely different people too.
I'm really good friends with this couple that's seeing some really big success right now, and they both write completely different genres of film. And it's so interesting because it's literally no difference between two writers who aren't selling and two writers who are selling, except for the fact that now they're scared. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like they've always read each other's stuff. And now they're selling. Now they're selling for a great deal of money, and like their names are in the trades and stuff like that. But it's so interesting because now they don't have time to read each other's because they're so scared.
Wow.
But they really need the other one to read. You know, it's like, again, they're like, I can't. I have to finish this thing. But you have to read this to give notes. It's so cool. It's so cool. I love seeing, you know, everybody coming up.
You know?
Yeah. You stick around long enough, you start to see everybody, like, you know,
like making it.
If you don't leave, you rise, and it's like, oh, it's so great. Anyways,
sometimes, well, speaking of that, like people rising, I feel like sometimes, like you see people, or even like I've noticed it a little bit in myself. Like sometimes I think like, oh, I failed, but then like that's what kind of like gets me to, like, a next meeting or something like that, and I'm like, oh wow, I'm like failing upwards. This is so interesting.
Yeah.
So I sometimes I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Like, I thought I failed, but it just pushing me up. Cool. I don't mind it. Jenny?
Yeah, I've actually only been in LA itself, like lived here for about a year and a half now. And I mean, I knew a lot of people in LA before because my sister's lived out here for so long. But I feel like now that I've been out here for so long, in quotations, I feel like I've seen more people, more success, I guess. And so it's really interesting because you meet more people and then you see this person's doing this, which you probably wouldn't have like known this person ever unless I'd moved out here. You know, I don't know. I feel like I see people succeeding faster now that I live out here. And so it's really interesting to
think
about.
You see both, you know, you see people, you know, doing well, and then you see people dropping off.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, it's intense, but that's this city.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I like it. I'm not in the entertainment business at all, but I love the.
I'm afraid you have a web.
I mean, a podcast.
What the hell are we calling these things?
What do we do this?
Podcast.
It's called the radio. Call in now.
Showbiz, pal. Sorry, you're
it's
in
not
it.
The same. Okay, so I will do my recap. My number five was The Muppets Take Manhattan. My number four was How to Marry a Millionaire. Three was All That Jazz. Two was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And my number one is 1968's The Producers.
Good one.
I love this one. Yes, I did the older version. I've seen the Matthew Broderick version, and I think it's fine, but
it's not the same.
I love Gene Wilder. I just have a soft spot in my heart for Gene Wilder, always. I love him so much.
He is that character. He is Leo Bloom. And so, as much as I love Matthew Broderick, he can't be Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Because like even Mel Brooks has said that Gene Wilder is Leopold Bloom.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was him. And just everything he does with the blanket and this high strung and the yelling, it's so Gene Wilder.
It really
and
is.
I love Gene Wilder.
Who doesn't?
I'm kind of sad that he's not doing things. Like I hate that Gene Wilder. I can't go see a new Gene Wilder movie.
Yeah, it is kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Thanks for bumming us out, Jenny.
You're welcome. I needed everyone to remember that he's not doing anything
anymore.
We can
go watch all of the other Gene Wilder movies. I mean, they're still there to watch.
I guess
you can watch his A&E mystery series. I'm sure you haven't got around to that yet.
I haven't gotten around to that.
There you go.
It hasn't come up on Netflix Roulette. Well, very cool. I dig this movie.
Like this movie?
Yeah. It's surprising. Another musical I have seen.
It's
yes.
not a musical.
No, I mean, sorry.
I no. mean...
It's about making a musical.
That's true.
But it's not a musical.
Yeah, I guess that's why I don't mind.
The remake is a musical.
So I think I like All That Jazz.
All right.
So if it's about making musicals, I'll watch it.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
So you'll watch A Chorus Line?
Oh, he would hate A Chorus Line.
But Michael Douglas is in it.
I love Chorus Line. Yeah. Michelle loves Chorus Line more than I do. I love Chorus Line.
It's really good.
Right. We went all through Amoeba the other like a few months ago looking for Chorus Line so Michelle could take it, so she could buy it. And they did not have it. Amoeba didn't have a Chorus Line.
Well, I mean, it's not a. I think it's a rare DVD. I don't think they did very many.
Well, now we know. I'm just saying
we're in the minority here.
It's on Netflix.
Is it yeah, still?
That's how I watched it. Oh well, I don't know. Still, it was a little while ago.
Maybe it
at one point it was on Netflix, which I think makes me feel like it should be on everything.
Some stuff that's on Netflix isn't on DVD.
Yeah, no, they get they get like a special because it's not out of print.
Netflix. Yeah, yeah. Think maybe they'll sponsor us. And Jack, the fine people of Jack Daniels. all right, so I'll do my recap and then my number one. Five, The Warriors. Four, Taxi Driver. Three, Midnight Cowboy. Two, Death Wish. And my number one, I love this movie. This director kind of, I was kind of over this director for a bit. And he pulled me back in just when I thought I was out. He pulls me back in. The writing on this is amazing and the acting. And by far, the cinematography blew me away. 25th Hour.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
I'm still obsessed with this movie.
I did put it on my, like, it was in the runnings for my list, but I'm like, I couldn't remember if you used it already. But in my mind, I was like, Ricardo's probably going to talk about this.
Yeah. I'm telling you, like, top-notch, like, you look at the IMDb page, and, like, cinematographer, one of my favorite cinematographers, Rodrigo Prieto, doing that club scene inside when they're when they're having that party, some of the best stuff I've seen. You know, it's just some great stuff on film.
The whole thing visually, just like him sitting there on the bench.
Yeah,
when the junkie comes up and asks him for a fix.
Yeah, and
like, the whole thing, just his close up at Ground Zero or whatever. Like it's gorgeous, but the acting is amazing. It's just firing on all cylinders.
So for people who haven't seen this, basically Ed Norton's character, Monty. He basically is going to jail because he's a drug dealer and he doesn't know who kind of called the cops on him, and the cops show up and they do a search of his house and they find a bunch of marijuana and I think money. And so he's going to jail. He's out on bail and his friends are throwing him like one last like party to because he's the next morning he's going to jail. And his friends are Philip Seymour Hoffman and Barry Pepper, who are amazing in this. His dad is Brian Cox. His girlfriend is Rosario Dawson. And it's basically like the last hurrah. And it's he's going to jail, you know, that the next day. And it's his last day of freedom. He's going in for, I think, five or seven years.
Seven.
And it doesn't seem like that much, but it's 7 years is going to change people. You know, his girlfriend will not be there when he gets out, probably. And everyone has an agenda, you know. And for me, like, just the relationship he has with his dad and, like, that monologue in the bathroom where he's, like, cursing out everybody. Like, one of the best, like, monologues ever. Just the way the movie starts as well, like, with a dog. Mm-hmm. Everything is top-notch. And kind of... It kind of like brought back filmmaking to New York, I feel. Like he was the first guy to kind of, after 9/11, kind of be like, well, fuck it. We're going to film there. Like we, you know. And that shot, there's a shot that's Barry Pepper and Philip Seymour Hoffman are talking about Ed Norton's character. And it's one long shot. It must be like a 5-10 minute shot. And it's just of them talking. It doesn't cut to anything else. But in the background, you see Ground Zero, and all the stuff they're talking about. It's just a great scene, and it's kind of like great filmmaking, I think. And I was kind of over Spike Lee after this, and before this, just kind of it was like the same thing for me. And then this is like, wow, I couldn't believe it was from him. Like it's just this and like The Inside Man. It just really kind of blew me away, like what he was really kind of doing at this stage of his career. So, anyway. I'm rambling on.
It's a good pick.
It's a great movie. I kind of, looking back, I'm kind of just baffled that I didn't have it on my adaptations list that we did back in the day.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the few instances where I think it's a perfect adaptation.
Like, is it Don DeLillo? Who is it?
It's the book?
No, it's a Game of Thrones guy.
David Benioff.
Yeah. It's based on his novel.
Yeah, his novel. But it's like a perfect
Yeah.
Perfect adaptation.
Cool.
Like, I love them both, the movie and the book, equally.
Yeah.
It, nice. Just, that's rare.
Yeah. It's rarely yeah. happens. And it's so, like, it just transferred. I guess because he's a screenwriter also, but yeah. it transferred perfectly. And I was so surprised that they had the Anna Paquin character. Because, mm-hmm. like, when you read the book, and that's an interesting side story, but you don't think that they're going to bring Philip Seymour Hoffman's sort of B plot into mm-hmm. the movie. But they did, and it works really well. And the whole thing, it just works so well together.
And just, like, even watching, I rewatched it for this podcast. And just even, like, the editing, too. Like, when he goes to the club and he hugs the bouncer. Like, they do the hug on one setup. But then they replicate it on the other. When he cuts to a different take, mm-hmm. he does a hug again. So it's like a double take. And it's like, wow, like all these interesting like just little like things he puts in the movie kind of blow me away. And his signature shot on that dolly. it had gotten old, but...
The Spike Lee.
Yeah, the Spike Lee. Yeah. but yeah, everything's amazing. Anna Paquin again is amazing.
It's weird. I feel bad because it was one of those movies where... I mean, I read the book first, I saw it in theaters and I loved it, and I just bought the DVD on instincts, and I haven't watched it in such a long time, but I just knew that I loved it enough to buy it as soon as it came out.
Yeah, and I think that's why he does so well in like Game of Thrones, is because like he's a novelist first, mm-hmm. and then a screenwriter second, and I feel like he gets like, okay, I know what I need from the book to make it into a screenplay. So I like this guy like a lot, and I liked a movie he made after this called Stay. That not a lot of people saw, but it was Mark Forster, and it also takes place in New York.
You liked the pre-release cut?
Yes, yes.
Have you? Because you still haven't seen the release cut.
Because
whenever you say that, I'm telling you need to watch what they've released.
Really?
Before you say that, because the release was not very good.
All right, I'll watch it. All right.
I don't know what to tell you.
Done. That's my number one.
The studio did something with that movie. Or something.
I'm out.
Well, don't drop your mic. It's bad for the diaphragm.
What's your recap?
Okay, so my recap. Number five was On the Town. Number four was New York, New York. Number three was Godspell. Number two was Little Shop of Horrors. And my number one, which I have really no words for how much I love this movie and how puzzling that might be to most people, but I really, really love 1969's Hello, Dolly.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know what this is.
You don't.
It is a okay. This right. is the musical of all musicals that you will probably hate the most.
Oh yeah, no, don't ever.
It is
this.
People singing randomly. It is a period piece musical, and it stars Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand. All right. Bra.
My grandma.
You had me at Hello Dolly. Really? Like I don't want to see a movie with that title.
Yeah.
Exclamation point! By the way.
Yeah, there's an exclamation point in it. And this is another Don Lee and Gene Kelly movie, or maybe it might just be Gene Kelly.
So what's
the synopsis? Oh, it's just Gene Kelly. So Dolly Levi is based on a play called The Matchmaker, and she is hired by people to like basically her job is arranging things. Mm-hmm. That's one of the songs. And she arranges matches, she arranges whatever you need arranging, she'll get it in order. And she's hired by Horace Vandegelder, played by Walter Matthau, to arrange his engagement to... Is it bad that I know all these characters' names off the top of my head?
You're like,
not even reading off of IMDb.
Yeah, that's bad.
So Dolly Levi is hired by Horace Vandegelder to arrange a marriage with Irene Malloy, who is a millinery in New York.
What's a millinery?
She makes hats.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Wow. You need this information.
My grandma introduced me to this movie. So that's a kind of like a 1-2. I don't want to take it down. My grandma, she passed away recently, and this is one of the movies that I used to watch all the time with my grandma. And yeah, there's like anytime I went to my grandma's house, this is one of the five or six movies that was in rotation. We would watch this or Singing in the Rain or something else.
It's a comfort movie.
Yeah,
it is. That's totally how it is for me too. I actually just rewatched it this past summer, and you know what I ate with it? Tomato soup and grilled cheese, because that's comfort food, and yeah. I needed a comfort night.
Mm-hmm.
So you watch Hello Dolly, grilled cheese, and tomato soup.
Mm.
That's what I did.
Put your Snuggie on.
Yep, my Snuggie. I like Hello Dolly.
Or a regular blanket.
Okay.
No. My Dodgers Snuggie. No, I'm just kidding. No. I like this woman. I like this movie. Like, I like Barbara Streisand, though. I can't help it.
I do too.
I'm a musical theater.
She's
person.
Dolly.
Okay.
So, yeah. And what's weird? Okay, so
it's funny though. It's a funny movie. Like,
I had seen
Barbara Streisand's a funny actress.
I think she's really good. She's hilarious.
I think.
But I had seen the play also.
I'm sticking up for her.
It was weird seeing. I feel like I saw the play before I saw the movie. Like I saw the play, and I told my grandma that I saw the play because when I was a kid, I went to arts camp, so I did plays during the summer, and we would go see plays.
Okay.
And one of the plays we saw was Hello, Dolly at the Lawrence Welk Theater, and so it was weird because Dolly is traditionally a much older character. So seeing Barbara Streisand play Dolly was kind of weird because she's really young in this because it's 1969. She's not that old. And she's playing this woman whose husband has already died, and she's like arranging a marriage, and she's trying to, she's trying to arrange, quote unquote, arrange Walter Matthau's marriage, but really her ulterior motive is she wants to marry him. And so she just kind of has all these schemes going on when she's sending people to New York to like intercept Walter Matthau, and she wants them to fall in love with the people that Walter Matthau is trying to get married to. And Tommy Tune is in it, which probably means nothing to Ricardo since he doesn't like musicals. But he's a really talented dancer musical. He's huge. He's just really
very tall.
Very, very tall. Michael Crawford is in it as Cornelius. And
I'm wowed.
You keep adding to the list of things why I shouldn't watch this movie.
Cornelius Michael Crawford, who was also famous for playing Phantom and Phantom of the Opera, or Barnum and the Barnum musical. But yeah, it's so much fun and it's so New York and it's just all over the place. And she's talking about the Harmonia Gardens and Louis Armstrong shows up and sings Hello Dolly. Yeah. It's so good. And it's so all pretty. Over the place.
It's such a fun, beautiful movie.
Yeah, it's big and blousy and it totally bombed at the box office. And this is part of the reason why musicals died for such a long time because of 69. So everyone was really upset about what was going on.
This is the Ishtar of movies, of musicals.
It was pre-Ishtar. Well, yeah.
Of musicals.
I mean, considerably.
Technically
a
musical. I mean, they're lounge singers and they sing.
That's horrible.
but like this and like Paint Your Wagon, which is another movie that I watch all the time with my grandma, right around the same time, and they just kind of they were the wrong mood, and they totally paved the way for like Easy Rider, same year. But I love Hello Dolly so much, and it's very much old timey New York, and they go from Manhattan to Yonkers and back again.
All right.
And well, it's weird to see, like, old-timey New York with, like, the constables and horse-drawn carriages, and there was a parade. And
all the ladies in their big hats.
Yeah, the big hats.
So it's like it's a Gangs of New York, but a musical.
It's a little bit later.
Isn't it suffrage time, something like that? Or, like, that's how I feel like the fashions are. I equate it to Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
And the mom, you know, going out and picketing for suffrage, but... I don't actually have any facts to back
that. Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I don't know what year it's supposed to take place. You got it up on your IMDb. What's it say? Does it have a year? I have no idea. I mean, it's back in the day where they still had milliners and Horace Van de Gelder runs a feed shop.
And constables.
Constables, yeah. And they have horse-drawn carriages still.
Wow.
But it's so good. You would hate it, Ricardo.
Well, I'm going to see it just because you've already sold it as not, a movie not to watch.
I'll see it, though. I'll see it.
I love it so much.
All right. Well, that was a good list. Any honorable mentions you guys want to throw out?
A whole bunch because there were so many movies that weren't musicals that are about New York.
Blaine, you started us off. What are some of your movies on your list?
You know, last time we did, I had the honor of being here. We talked about Annie Hall a little bit. And so I didn't want to bring that up again. But I think Annie Hall is a great New York movie because it compares New York to L.A., which is very seldom done in cinema, and it's such a great juxtaposition. You know, it's so much fun making fun of L.A., you know, from a New York perspective. And everything they say is right, by the way, just for the record. It's all right. and After Hours, which I think is a fun movie.
That was on my list.
I don't necessarily love that movie, but I think it's very much... how New York feels. Wait, and
does it make you feel weird too? Because that movie, again,
it makes me feel weird.
Like it just puts me in a weird like space. Like it just uncomfortable when I watch that movie.
I think that's the thing. It's like it's constantly like it's a weird thing to say, but there's something about movies that either they're comfortable or they're not. And some people love being uncomfortable. I'm not that. I like pushing the envelope. I like, you know, seeing new things. It's like the thing with Mean Streets. It's like, I love Taxi Driver more than I love Mean Streets because Taxi Driver, I'm in his world.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm comfy. You're taking me on a ride.
Yeah.
Let's see where this goes. You know, there are certain movies. It's just like, I don't know if I like where this is going. This yeah. whole, my seat is uncomfortable, you know? Yeah. It's like, so yeah, it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It just means it's not my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. I feel the same way. What else is on the list?
That's it for my honorable mentions, yeah.
I feel like I just left Woody Allen out because we talk about him way too much. So I just left... I
figured Manhattan. Someone else would have done Manhattan, but I also just used it on the last list about movies and if you want to travel, since I'm apparently the only person here who has not been to New York.
Yeah.
True.
But yeah, Manhattan, I felt like was a given.
Well, anything Woody Allen. Yeah. I left out, yeah. For people who are going to be like, you didn't put Manhattan on the list. Jenny, what did you leave out?
Some of the ones that we've named in the past, like Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And I really like Men in Black. That one's another. And then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I did that one.
One
before.
And two.
Thank you.
Yep. And Crocodile Dundee.
Oh, good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And then Home Alone 2. I love that one.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters. Newsies.
Ghostbusters. I can't believe I missed Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That totally would have made my list if I thought of it.
Because I work in a museum, Night at the Museum. I really like The Other Guys. That's another New York one. And Shame is New York. I thought maybe you would put that one on there, but you did not.
No. I did think that you would have that too also.
I did. I feel like I'm going to save it for a different list. Right. Weird sex movies.
Sexy movies.
Yeah.
Oh, and Big.
Big is a great New York one. Yeah.
That's a big New York one, I feel
Which,
like.
Which, it was a weird... there were so many different avenues to go down with this list where it's like movies that make me want to go to New York and movies that don't make me want to go to New York. And Big is one of those weird movies that could be on either because when he first gets there and he's so creeped out.
It is creepy.
And it's like, oh, that doesn't sound fun. He's in that tenement building and like the people are yelling and he puts the bed in front of the door.
Yeah, even the little thing, the little game thing that he goes to is creepy.
Oh,
the talking. What's it called?
Zoltan.
Yeah, Zoltan. Yeah. That's creepy.
Yeah,
I would never talk to one of those ever.
Never talk to strangers. Never talk to Zoltan.
Yeah. I know better.
Is there anything else on your list?
That's about it.
I put Do the Right Thing.
Thank you.
Good one.
Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Yes.
One of the few movies that actually features the Statue of Liberty when it's got the construction around it.
Yeah. They shot part of it outside of the scaffolding stuff. And then they recreated just the head of it on stage.
I thought it was the
torch. I think you're right. The torch.
Do you know how many people they had to go through for Fred? What's his name?
Fred Ward.
Yeah,
Fred Ward to be Remo Williams. I bet you they went through like at least 30 names of movie stars. I love the training season sections.
Me too.
Yeah, they're so good. And that. Wait a minute. That guy isn't that the guy that the dancing movie's about?
Joel Grey.
Oh, no, Joel Grey, okay.
But he's
different dancer.
Yeah, he's in...
Cabaret. Yeah, okay, never mind.
Joel Grey playing like this...
Playing an Asian.
Asian, like Chinese master, like Kung Fu master.
Joel Grey playing...
generic Asian guy.
What's his name from Pai Mei?
Yeah.
Nice.
And this movie's so fun. Like, this movie is just like... this movie needs to be remade, because it's so simple... And it's such so cool, like just the thought of like this secret CIA type organization. Well, they're kind of like
I feel like we could have also used this on the movies that we wanted sequels for. Still.
Oh yeah, well, or remakes of this.
That scene where he uses that guy who's in every like he plays a henchman in every other movie. He's the bad guy in what's that Van Damme movie where he goes to jail?
Oh yeah, Death Warrant.
Death Warrant.
Don't you fucking test me on Van Damme TV.
No, well I knew that you would know. I could remember the name of it. He was creepy as fuck in that movie.
Yeah.
But he's one of the bad guys in this movie.
And he uses his tooth?
Yeah, the crystal in his tooth to cut the glass.
Yeah, I love this movie. Wilford Brimley's in this.
Yeah.
Pre-diabetes.
He could have had it back then still.
I guess he could have. He was pretty big. After Hours is also on my list. On the Waterfront, Escape from New York.
Oh, and yeah. Escape from New York was like came up in my head tonight.
And Wall Street. And Wall Street 2, which stars our the movie, the lady in your movie.
Natalie Morales,
who was on here last week. Very cool. That's my list. What's yours?
Okay. So basically, most of the movies everyone else mentioned, Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, good one.
Chud.
Yes.
Do
the whole title.
well, I mean, what is it? I can't even,
I can't even think straight right now. I'm two drinks in.
All right.
Too stiff.
What is the full name of Chuck?
I don't know. Cannibal humanoid underdwellers.
Yeah.
Well.
With Daniel Stern. I have not seen that film. Disturbingly greasy. Like, he's just sweaty the whole movie.
For no reason.
He plays this guy who runs like a homeless shelter, and these humanoid underdwellers are eating homeless people. They're living in the sewers. And so he's like noticing his patrons are going missing. He's trying to figure out what's wrong. It's such a weird movie.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Wow.
What else is on
But definitely Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
One Shaft.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I love the intro to Shaft. Was like, for the longest time, that was New York to me. I'm like, oh, yeah, just like that. Zooming in on Shaft walking down the street. And he also, and instead of, I think was, wait, so what year was Midnight Cowboy?
Midnight Cowboy was, but before we get to that, I always wanted a Shaft leather trench coat.
Oh, I bought many a leather jackets trying to emulate Shaft.
You did.
My mother can attest to
1969.
Okay.
Midnight Cowboy.
So Shaft has like a sort of nod to Midnight Cowboy when the car almost hits him and he calls the dude a jive turkey. but I love this movie so much. It's got like it's the ultimate blaxploitation movie, but not I don't know, because Gordon Parks made it and he's black, so I don't feel like it's black people being exploited. It's black people making a strong, upstanding black movie.
Yeah,
I love it. Shaft's good.
I love it too.
I even saw the remake in theaters, and it was not as good.
No, well, Christian Bale was badass. Because I just imagined him as Bait.
Patrick Bateman. That's another New York movie.
Yeah,
doesn't make me want to go to New York.
American Psycho.
Yeah,
I feel like that should be underrated comedies.
American Psycho.
Yeah.
Or Shaft.
No. Yeah, both. Is that all your list?
I feel like there's so many more. Yeah, I just kind of stopped at a point where I'm like, I'm just gonna stick with musicals.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think.
There's one other one. Fingers.
What?
Harvey Keitel.
Oh, yeah.
It's James Toback. Basically any James Toback movie, because Fingers and Black and White.
Yeah.
They're both really weird and kind of Black and White. I like Fingers better.
Really?
But are you familiar with...
Not familiar at all, no.
Harvey Keitel plays a... he's a loan shark who is also a... he's an amazing pianist. And he's trying to live up to his father's expectations of him and get into a conservatory. But he's also running numbers for his uncle. It's like him going back and forth between trying to be an artist and trying to be a hustler. And Jim Brown is in it. And it's just this weird, what part of New York is this movie? Like, where in New York does this stuff happen? I want to see that, but from a distance. And so you watch Fingers. And it's just a bizarre, bizarre movie.
Black and White's cool,
but it's fun. Yeah. Black and White's just weird. The scene with Robert Downey Jr. and Mike Tyson.
That's one of my favorite scenes.
No, it's amazing, but it's just so bizarre.
Yeah, yeah. Anything Mike Tyson is in that's not a documentary is weird. But yeah, so if that's how we should tease you with.
Mike Tyson is a fantastic actor.
Robert Downey Jr. He is. He's a great tour de force in this movie.
he has a one-man show that people are flocking to.
Yeah. It's advantageous.
That. Yeah.
Right now.
All I have to say about that is, what the fuck are you talking about? That's it. I saw the billboard for it, and that was my response.
Directed
by Spike
Lee.
What the fuck are you talking about? Okay, and to this I have to say, what the fuck is he talking about? What are we talking about? Convicted rapist.
It's true.
Stage show. Can barely string a sentence together.
He's got
another man's ear off in a professional sporting event.
Got tattoos on his face.
He is legit, guys.
Like, when the tattoos on your face are the least offensive part of what you're doing... doing things wrong.
Did that NBC Law and Order petition work? Is he not going to be on Law and Order? Is he going to be on Law and Order?
He's supposed to be on Law and Order? Like a regular?
I have no idea.
I just remember on the interweb somewhere something about people petitioning against having a convicted rapist.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like...
Unless he's going
to
play a rapist.
If something horrible happens to you, I feel like people are like, oh, well, it balances it out. Like Roman Polanski. You know? Like they're like, well...
That's not something horrible happening.
Tate.
Yeah, okay.
Like, oh, well, his wife was brutally murdered, so, you know, like, you're...
He gets to get out of jail free. Yeah, a literal get out of jail
and
free
like,
card.
Mike Tyson's like, well, his daughter died. Come on, man. But no, I mean, he's still a rapist, and so is Roman Polanski.
Well, no, but different. Different. He was a, you know, he had sex with a 16-year-old girl. Different than raping somebody, being convicted by it for it, you know, a grown woman in a hotel room and, like,
and,
you know.
And biting an ear.
Yeah, I mean,
look, dabbling in cannibalism.
I'm not saying it's okay to sleep with underage girls. So, but one of them is forcible, one of them isn't. Yeah, you know what I mean? They're, to me, there's a slight difference. Well, I should shut up.
We just got really dark.
I didn't mean to. I'm just saying, what are we talking about? Do we really want to see a one-man show with Mike Tyson? I'm sorry, I'm yelling in everybody's ear.
No, it's okay.
I'm like, where's the bar for entertainment when this guy, who I can't stand to watch in an interview, is doing a two-hour show at the Pantages? Mike, I'm coming for you.
Well, you I think the simplest way to reiterate what you're saying is, he's not exactly the one you think of when you think of stage presence. Like, he's no Richard Burton.
No.
Yeah.
So no. Not, I don't really think I'm going to be just riveted by his oration.
He's no John Leguizamo.
He isn't. Freak was way better, and that was also Spike Lee.
Yeah.
Well, I can't really say I didn't see this Tyson stand-up thing, but I can only imagine.
I feel like I'm not interested. Like, eh?
I don't really know what he has to say.
Yeah. I don't care.
He's the guy. And he's so, like, yeah, he's so soft-spoken. That sounded kind of like Brando.
Yeah. It's kind of like Brando was doing an impression of Mike Tyson. All right, let's wrap this up. Buy the six-month rule on DVD.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pre-order it right now. You can do it right now. You can go to your computer right now and do it if you want.
And you could stream it right now, no? Like on iTunes?
Yeah, you can watch it on iTunes. You can watch it on anything, streaming, video on demand, all that jazz.
And then your other movie, when can we expect that?
Favor is just now having its festival premiere, which probably means it'll probably be at least 6 months before it actually hits you know, some kind of distribution.
And what is that movie about?
That's the one about the
the murder.
The murder.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
I accidentally kill somebody, and then my best friend helps me get rid of the body.
Yeah.
The tagline is, a good friend helps you move, a great friend helps you move a body. That's right. You know?
Oh, I like that.
But it's going to be great. It's a great movie, and like if it's in your city, please watch out for it, and you know, come out
and
support
it. Is it a drama or a comedy?
No, it's a full-on thriller. It's like...
Oh, okay.
It's, there's murders
and I like that.
Fighting and awesomeness.
And, we got to be present when you were doing the commentary for 6 months.
Present, an integral part of my DVD commentary.
But,
thank you.
But what's so fun, I was telling somebody about this, about how it was so fun to watch a movie for the first time, but yet get the insight immediately. Like, it was really cool because I was listening to the commentary, literally, but watching it for the first time, but I can enjoy both. And it was really interesting because it was enjoying the movie and being like, oh, okay, so that's what you had to do to get this. And or like, oh, this was this take. And it was really an interesting experience for me.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for helping on it, you know. But like, one of my favorite things about, you know, making movies is like building the DVD, you know, because making independent film is such a, it takes a village. Yeah. And it takes, you know, so many people pulling together, and so many stories come out of it, that I think it's such a crime when a movie comes out without, you know, some comment on this. And, you know, there are certain filmmakers that are on a bigger scale that they basically want the story to stand by its own. And I love that. I respect that. But my DVD comes packed with shit. You have to watch a 20-minute, you know, behind-the-scenes blooper reel on my DVD because it's all part of how this thing came to be. So, you know, it's got DVD, you know, bloopers and commentary and behind the scenes.
I love bloopers.
Yeah,
every
me too.
DVD should have bloopers on it.
It should be a crime if you don't have bloopers.
I agree.
I think every movie has its personality, and every
I don't
movie,
care what movie
you know,
it is.
I'm with you.
I mean, the one movie that comes to mind that I just bought is Schindler's List, and I don't know if it would need a blooper reel.
I want to see some bloopers.
I want to see some
fallen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some Whoops. Falling.
Yeah. Someone trips. I don't know.
Somebody.
Yeah.
The little girl in the red dress kind of like trips, and they're like,
that squib went off early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be awkward. You're right.
Someone flubbing the line, like Liam Neeson.
Yeah, everyone's laughing.
Yeah. It's like, oh, Oscar. He was a character the whole time. no, but 6 month rule comedy was really fun to watch, and to, I feel like also I learned so much about filmmaking, like about making movies, more so than in film school, just listening to commentaries, because you learn the lessons from like firsthand from people who made the mistakes already, and like it's like, here, don't make this mistake, this is what we did, and it's kind of like, okay, I don't have to make that mistake because you just taught me not to, you know. So I love commentaries, and thanks for being here. What is your Twitter?
at Blaine Weaver.
There you go.
Boom. With a Y.
And the movie Twitter? 6 month rule?
Yeah, it's at the number 6 month rule. We're out there, very searchable. But yeah, this was great, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming back.
And you can find us on Twitter at The Film Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, U-L-T-R-E-R-A-S.
I'm at Janae, J-E-H-N-E-I-G-H.
I'm at an Adam Scott, A-N underscore Adam Scott.
And when you go to buy the six-month rule on Amazon, click through a little banner on our website, and not only does Blaine get a little shekels in his pocket, but we do too.
Yay, shekels.
Double shekels. Yay, shekels. So there you go. Go to our website and click on the link. And until next time, have a good week.